hamster with a blunt penknife would do it quicker.
Welcome back to A Hamster with a Blunt Penknife, the Doctor Who commentary podcast. I'm here today with a hamster virgin commentator, but not a virgin to a hamster with a blunt penknife, Mr. Dan Pin. Hello, Dan.
Hello, Joe.
How are you doing today?
Great to be here.
Oh, my God. Well, will you tell everybody else where you've been elsewhere, please, in the hamsterverse?
Oh, yeah. So I've done a handful of podcasts. Started on Luke Malloy's Lost and Gallifrey.
What a place to start!
Oh yeah, I was delighted to be asked on it, to be honest, because they didn't have very many guest appearances or whatever. But so Luke was very kind and had me on there. And then they stopped doing the podcast not long after that. So I
finish them off?
I think I did. I hope I'm not cursing. You're gonna take the ham farm down.
I'm not sure anything could bring this down, but let's see how we do. All right.
And then I did one with Dave Rennie. Kept on a piece of string on. I think the first one was the Android Invasion, and then I've done What's in the Box with Jim Allenby. That was really good because I love that format because it's quite personal, isn't it? The things that you bring to the table on that. So it was really good.
Was certainly personal when I talked to him.
Oh yeah. Man alive. I was like,
did you get an education from that?
Yeah,
I'm so pleased.
I loved it, and I think I DM'd you about it after you know, kind of thing, and I was like, you don't know me, so I hope you don't think I'm like some weird stalker, but yeah, really got me,
Oh dear God!
But I've done another one with Dave since then, Time Lash, which was
glorious that episode.
Yeah, and then obviously I've done a Strictly episode with yourself and Rod and Mark Cockrum, which is yet to be released into the wild.
Although I suspect it'll be out by the time this is released.
Okay.
If you haven't heard that already, why not?
Yeah,
go and listen to it. We got to talk about bandits, enormous green penises, you know, the Empress being eaten.
Wonderful. Anyway, that was a good one. I enjoyed that very much.
Well, look, you had the entire body of Doctor Who to choose from to do as your first commentary. I kind of left it open to you. And why don't you tell everybody what you've chosen to talk about today?
Yeah, well, we are going to build high for happiness because we're talking about Paradise Towers from season 24.
A bold choice, may I say?
Yeah. Because it's one of those ones, I think you either like it or you don't. And I think there's probably more people that don't like it than do. Although I would say there seems to be a softening of opinion to season 24 because it was generally hated. And, it, you know, this is going to kill Doctor Who off and what have you. Whereas I think over time, because I think those of us that watched it when we were kids, we've now got the voice, haven't we, in a way?
Yeah.
And I think we're kind of banging the drum for, actually, no, it was good, you know?
It's all those people, you know, that are podcasting, you're right. And people of a particular age bracket. I won't say of a particular age because that sounds rude. But let's say 30 or over, who were kids then and are adults now. And I've just been talking to so many of those people on this podcast that I've gone from, you know, lamenting this era of Doctor Who to holding it high. I mean, I've done a complete 180 on McCoy, on the era, on all of it.
Yeah, because I've had peaks and troughs with it. So I loved it when I was a kid and I thought it was the bee's knees. It was the best thing ever. And then I suppose you kind of expand your horizon a little bit beyond the TV and you start buying things like Doctor Who magazine. You start reading those sort of factual books. You know, we had loads that come out in the early 90s, didn't we? Like the 80s and those handbooks and all that sort of thing. And you're bombarded with this kind of like, oh yeah, it's not as good as it was in the 60s, and this isn't great, this is trash and all this sort of stuff. And I think because personally for me, I was obviously in my formative years and I had no other Doctor Who voice in my head, because my journey with Doctor Who was very, very lonely. No one else in the town that I grew up in liked Doctor Who. It was just me. And I kind of like, oh boy, they must be right. They must be right, because these guys have seen it all. I've only seen this, a fraction of the series.
Said it a
They
million
must.
times, you know, things like the handbooks, the Hal Stammer Walker handbooks, they're not academic texts, but they're laid out intelligently. Like when you're a kid reading those, it feels like a fact book rather than a critique.
Definitely. And I think, and I guess that's probably true of every factual book, that the authors or the author will come at it from a biased opinion. That, it's very rare for them to be sort of like, we're going to be really balanced and really fair with this. And I think there's the scales were definitely tilted in the favor of earlier Doctor Who than later.
I hear podcast hosts are a little biased as well sometimes,
Oh,
when they record these things.
really?
Yeah. I barely mention Stephen Moffat ever,
But yeah, so I had this period where I because it's what I was being told by adults and like you say, people of authority, I suppose, within fandom, I kind of really fell out of love, and I thought, Sylvester was the worst doctor. I thought, the end of the 80s was the period that killed Doctor Who, because that's what I was being told.
How
And
did you turn
then,
that around then?
my mum and my sister. So I have got two older sisters. One's 12 years older than me, and one's 13. So I basically grew up with three mums. They mothered me.
Oh, that sounds wonderful.
It is, because basically they were popping off to the big town, Barnstable in North Devon, and they were going, oh, is there anything you want us to bring back? And again, I would chance my arm. Yeah, can I have a Doctor Who video? And they brought me back Ghostlight,
Ooh.
and I can remember feeling, oh God.
Oh no. One of the
I
best
didn't.
stories ever. What's
Yeah,
wrong with you?
oh, it's the worst doctor. And it, I mean, I love visuals. And that's it's one of the most, for me, one of the best VHS covers. I think the artwork on that, I think it's Colin Howard, I think, did most of those VHSs at that time. And it's just brilliant, the likeness of S Sophie and Sylvester, and it's really atmospheric, and it's
They're the big yellow thing in the spaceship on the cover as well. I think it is, isn't it?
yeah
Yeah, the thing that
yeah
pulses with light down in the cellar.
yeah yeah and I thought, at the end of the day, put aside that, it's not a great doctor, therefore it can't be a great story. It's a present from my mum and my sister, so what's not to like?
I suppose I'll put it on.
Rather than just stick it on the shelf. And it didn't take long for me to think, gee whiz, my opinion of this era is totally wrong. It's someone else's, it's not mine. So from that period onwards, I just couldn't get enough of it. And I think I've gone round to that kind of, sort of like 360 kind of. I've gone back to the beginning where I loved it, and I Sylvester's my doctor,
Did you hold a Hal Stammers and Walker book burning party?
No, they're still there on the shelf
What
behind me somewhere.
a load of cobblers. Good thing podcasting came along. We've been dissecting those opinions ever since.
Yeah, because I'm pretty sure quite a few of the podcasts I've been involved in, I've slagged them off in some fashion or another,
We
mentioned
love
that.
you, honestly, David J. Howe. We do, and those books,
Yeah.
you know.
I mean, he's done. I mean, I don't, have you got like his Target book and the New Adventures ones? They're just beautiful
I live
books.
with a Doctor Who fan. There's two copies of everything in this house, you know. I mean, I bring it down to this level, and I hate to do this to you, but like they did give us the companions as well. I don't know if you ever saw that one, and
Yes.
remember inside the cover. Yeah, indeed. There you go. So they did some good work as well.
Oh yeah, and I mean, there can't be many TV series of that time that had had that much time and effort put into them from a I want to say historian, but that sounds really weird when we're talking about a program that's only like, 60 years old or whatever. But it's almost like historians picking it apart and telling us that journey and that story. I mean, I can't think of any other TV show that has that much love put into it
Also,
from.
as well, you take out the reviews, just that section, the rest of it is all fact. So we were learning, we were absorbing so much as well.
Definitely.
Well, look, swinging it around to this era then, I've got a couple of questions for you before we go
Okay.
into episode one. My first question is this the weakest Sylvester McCoy season? My second question for you is, you said you think people don't like this. Why might that be? And my third thing is a little game I want to play before we press play. So let's do the first one first. Is this the
Okay.
weakest Sylvester McCoy season?
That's a tough one to answer because I think I would say season 26 is peak Doctor Who, so I think that's the winner. On balance, you've got 25, which has got great stories in it, like Remembrance and Greatest Show. Yeah, and I guess season 24 doesn't necessarily have one on that level. But saying that, it's a season that I feel really, really comfortable watching. I find it a really easy watch. Whereas season 25 ne doesn't necessarily hit that kind of comfort spot. And I don't know what that's about. But I think if subjectively, if I was looking at it, yes, season 25 is better. So season 24 is probably his weakest, yeah, to answer your question. But I find it an easier watch than 25.
You're gonna think I'm mad, you know, but my ranking of Sylvester McCoy seasons goes
Oh.
third place 26,
Oh,
second
really?
place 25, first place 24.
Wow,
But I've
wow.
detailed that elsewhere on many other podcasts. I mean, I think Delta and the Bannermen is an absolute classic.
Oh, I love it.
Okay, what was my second question? I've forgotten. I was too busy listening to your
Oh,
answer.
why do people not
Oh,
like
that's right.
it?
Yeah, why do people like this story?
I think it's a season, it's a transitional season, and I think this probably is what you can consider the first proper Sylvester McCoy story, because as much as I like Time in the Rani, it is very much a Colin Baker script. Pip and Jane wrote it. They wrote really well for Colin's Doctor. It wasn't what either Andrew Morgan or Andrew Cartmell wanted to put on the TV, because I mean, I've I
Shame
was,
on them.
well, I was lucky enough to go to a Remembrance celebration at the end of last year, held at the actual school where they filmed it.
Oh, I saw that, yeah.
Oh, it was grand. I loved it.
What's the little girl Jasmine Breaks there?
No, but she did an intro video for it,
Oh,
because
great.
apparently, and I had no idea, but I think she works in television on Strictly Come Dancing. So she was too busy to attend, because obviously that period is when obviously it's all go, isn't it, for the dancing building up to
Yeah, you're
Christmas.
trying to sell me a line delivery of "You are a slave, Ratcliffe. You are born to serve the Daleks. Did not destroy her career."
No,
That's great. It's good to hear.
an acting career maybe, but not a career in
Yeah,
TV.
she never acted again. Just like that girl who played Squeak in Survival. Actually, I hear she's been in some soaps.
Yeah, she was in Emmerdale, wasn't she?
Yeah, big role as well.
Yeah, and very popular in the old lads mags of the late 90s, early noughties as well, I think. So,
Oh, really?
yeah, apparently, yeah.
Would it surprise you to hear I would know nothing about
Yeah.
that
No, it wouldn't.
at all? Although if I keep talking to you straight, man, I fear I may learn soon. Do you know? I think I'm on the turn, Dan. Honestly, people keep telling me how beautiful Amy Pond, Clara is, Bonnie Langford. I mean, these beautiful women in Doctor Who.
Yeah, but it was because I had a funny experience when Shooty's first episode aired, because my boss, he's probably about 5 or 6 years older than me, and he's married, but he loves to go on and on about his conquests throughout his life. So we have one-to-ones at work, and
He ain't gonna
he
listen to this, is he?
oh no.
Okay.
Well, I hope
Keep him
not.
anonymous. Just don't say the name, all right?
Yeah. And yeah, he's just going on about, this girlfriend and this partner and all this sort of stuff. And in the years, he was going on, he goes, oh, I don't know about him being in his pants, for most of the episode. And I said, well, what's the problem? He's a good looking guy. Why
Is
wouldn't you?
yeah
And he was like, oh, he was all like, oh, you can't say that. And I was going, well, why not? I'm a straight man. I can say that that guy there's handsome.
of
What,
course yeah oh I do know I feel like I know this is not casting aspersions on anybody, but I feel like we're a lot more fluid than we
Yes.
actually believe. I mean, we believe to, we like to set parameters, don't we?
You
But
do.
I bet that fella wouldn't complain about watching the episode one of Planet of Fire, though, would he? With Nicola Bryant not wearing very much.
No, he
How did
wouldn't.
we get here? I don't know. What were we talking about again?
Oh yeah, why people don't like Paradise Towers?
Oh, that's right.
I don't
Yeah.
know how he would. That
No,
doesn't
you
even.
mentioned the th event you went to, Remembrance event, with
Oh yes,
Andrew Cartmell and
Andrew
the
Morgan.
director. Yeah.
And so the day kicked off with like an interview with Andrew Morgan about his career and all that sort of thing. And oh, he had so many good things to say about Remembrance and the
Oh no, don't say it.
and nothing good to say about Time in the Rani. Yeah, there was just so much about it that he didn't like. And then later on in the day, you've got like a group sort of panel, and again, he was then he was then joined by Andrew Cartmell, and again, yeah, it wasn't the story that he wanted to kick his era off with, and obviously it's well documented. There were lots of tensions between him and
Oh, it's
James.
glorious when you read that book.
And yeah, so when you got people that were there that made it, and they're going, yeah, this is
Right.
so
Isn't it wonderful then that there does seem to have been a bit of a renaissance for both the season, these stories as well, you know?
Oh yeah, big time, because again, that's the thing. It's like, you've got these people that made Time in the Rani going, yes, it's a bag of crap. There's so much in it to enjoy. I mean,
Oh my God, it's
there's some
glorious.
great special effects and visuals and
Oh,
stuff like that. And
technically, it is
oh,
way above competent, and Doctor Who is barely competent most of the time, you know?
those bubble traps, I mean, they're just brilliant. They just look fantastic, even, sort of like, 30 odd years on, they still stand up as being really, really good effects.
Always make the argument that it is a bloody good panto. And so your mileage of Time of the Rani is whether you like a panto or not. And some people really hate them and don't want their Doctor Who to be them. Oh, I love them. So it's one of my favourites.
Yeah, I love those camp adventures. I just find them
You're not
so,
going to be disappointed tonight then.
no, so enjoyable. And I think that's why I really love this season 24. But I think I can yeah I can kind of see why people don't, because if that isn't your bag, that you like, serious, proper drama, then this isn't the season for you. But if you like that sort of comic book kind of camp romp, then this is great.
And yeah, I do think there is a sinister edge
Oh,
to this and Delta and Dragonfire. If you
yeah.
look beneath the surface of all the sort of tinsel and crazy Kev McCulloch music, there's some dark things going on, especially in this story.
Yes. I mean, cannibalism and
Mass murder, society gone to hell.
Well, yeah, and the fact that we live in a day and age where child welfare is quite a high priority. Well, basically, there's a gang of girls that were just kind of left to their own devices without adult supervision.
I mean,
So,
we're basically there in society, aren't we?
oh yeah.
If people are, can the food prices go up and the wages don't, then we may resort to cannibalism one day.
Oh yeah, definitely.
They called them oddball stories in the 80s. How did it become reality?
I mean that's the thing. I think out of the Sylvester McCoy era, it's funny how a lot of you can pick bits out of it and you think, geez, they were almost telling the future, as it is now.
Well, look, before we jump into episode one, I mean, people are getting good value out of us here. They've had 20 minutes out of us already, and we haven't even gone in yet. Well, it's our first time, we've got to
Oh yeah.
cover some ground. I'd like to play a game that I call Kang Speak. So I've extracted
Oh.
certain lines from the script,
Right.
of which I require for you to do a Google, or rather a Dan Pin translation of, if you wouldn't mind. Okay?
Okay, I can do my best.
I'll try and do it with sort of the way they say them in the story. Okay. Ah, he wants to how you do. Do we?
Basically they want to he wants to say hello, meet and
Oh,
greet.
I've kind of got that one, but thank you very much. Okay, Dan, well, what you wear is high fabtion and ice hot for an old one.
Despite the doctor's age, they like what he's wearing.
Are they tied and true?
Oh, yes. So this is the bit where they're tying up Mel and the doctor, isn't it? And so I'm just, it's like, have you tied the knots up nice and tight? They're not going to escape.
And finally, send the cleaners to the cleaners.
Basically, destroy those robotic menaces with their attachments.
Congratulations, you have
Yeah.
made it into the Kang Gang. Would you like to be red or blue?
Oh, red, definitely. Red Kang's the
Oh,
best.
yeah, you look fabulous in red as well. And actually, blue looks quite good on me. We're being rival gangs. But my point for doing that was that a lot of thought has gone into the setting here, hasn't it? And the society within.
I mean, if you overanalyze it, there are a lot of things that don't make sense
Oh,
with
please,
the
well, can you
world.
point them out as we go through?
But from a world that world building aspect, to actually have got that, they've almost got their own version of English, haven't they, for this, the Kangs. And that would happen, like I said, these girls have kind of almost raised themselves, haven't they? There's been no adult there to, so therefore they've developed their own form of the English language. And I think that's brilliant from Stephen Wyatt. It's just
I think it's a level of thought that's gone into this script that some Doctor Who scripts just don't have. Like, Terence Dudley would not be writing this, and truly thinking about the world that he's creating. Well, look, I mean, there's tons to unpick in this, and lots of wonderful guest actors and guest music and the great records and all sorts. I suppose we better press play on episode one. What do you reckon?
Oh, definitely.
Well, would you care to count us in then? To our
Okay.
very first commentary episode.
All right. 3, 2. One go.
So this music must do something for you then.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to be you either like it or you hate it. But I think for me, because this is, like I say, the first, it's the first era of Doctor Who I watched week in, week out. So it does hold sort of special memories for me, and it just takes me back to being a small child in my bedroom watching a black and white TV.
I think a specific generation, this is the most exciting opening sting to any theme tune ever, because, like you say, it's a basically a doorway back to being seven again.
Oh
You
yeah. But I mean, I should imagine that's true of anyone that whatever era they watched, just
yeah, yeah,
that intro just takes them right back.
yeah. For me, it might be actually because my first real, like, repeated era is the VHSs of John and Tom. So those openings really, really get me excited. Now look, we've gone from a very dark corridor there with that young girl being afraid to a very bright TARDIS.
Yeah, I mean, that was one thing, when I was re watching this to prepare for tonight, is quite often 1980s Doctor Who is overlit, and it's a thing, a lot of stories are hit with that stick. Whereas with this, it feels like they've thought about the lighting, and obviously the TARDIS console is bright and light and airy. Whereas, when you're in those corridors of Paradise Towers, it's dark, it's gloomy, they've thought about the set dressing as well, that there's bits of, filth and what have
It's
you up the walls, and
dirty, yeah. Doctor Who
whereas
in the future is never dirty, is it?
no. That's the thing, because you would, when Doctor Who does future, it's normally it's all white and glistening and
Whoa,
it's
look at the
bright.
TARDIS.
Whereas you've seen that they've thought about that sort of decay, that it's not a place that's been looked after because the main part of society went off to fight this war, and it's gone to rack and ruin, and I
Is
mean
it, there's
in
even like a rat, isn't there,
Yeah,
foraging around in it?
it's in the next scene. I think the Doctor boots a box and these rats come out. I mean, where has Doctor Who ever done that before?
I can't think of a time. No. And you know, I am gonna praise the sets and the lighting quite a bit as we go through this.
I think.
My one issue with this is because it is shot on video, I can tell these are studios.
Yeah. I think the thing that gives it away the most is the studio floor. For whatever reason,
They can't disguise
they can't disguise it, no.
it.
And you know that is a studio floor in the BBC building.
But like to complain that Doctor Who is shooting in a studio multi-camera on video, that's all of Doctor Who. And so on that logic, I have to be unimpressed by all of it. So I've just learned to live with it because it's such a well-created world.
And it looks big as well, doesn't it? I mean, like, you don't feel that this is like a tiny, cramped set. It's got a sense of depth. It's got a sense of scale. There's multiple layers as well,
The
and
bridge that goes across it, which means
yeah.
you can shoot from above quite a bit as well, which is really nice. Yeah. Oh, can I say something about this guy? Caretaker number 345, strokes 12,
Go for it. Go for
subsection 3. Oh, he's really hot. And
it.
when I went on Jim Allenby's podcast and spoke about the unexpectedly sexy men of Doctor Who, he was my pick for Sylvester McCoy years, even though
Oh,
he's only
really?
in three scenes. Yeah,
Oh,
he's
I've only
bang.
listened to the first half. I haven't done the second one yet.
Maybe I
Because
just like frightened men. I don't know. No, I didn't say that, did I?
oh, man.
But it's making a big point this, that even the authority figures are in danger.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's the shocking revelation of it, isn't it? Is that the only one that's really safe, and he ends up getting meeting a grisly end, is the chief caretaker, really.
Oh, well, that's a
He's
wonderful moment, that.
yeah,
You said you wanted camp.
and like we've got like a blooded Kang scarf as well. That's quite graphic for for Doctor Who. We don't normally see proper blood.
I just think the fact that this is a domestic setting, but it's a sort of urban setting with graffiti on the walls and things like this. This is Cartnell making his stamp. This is the sort of Doctor Who I want to tell about people in real settings. I know this is all a bit heightened, and because I do wonder if perhaps the director and the writer are on different pages, but it's definitely like a mission statement, isn't it?
I think that, you know, we've already said how he wasn't happy with Time in the Rani because it wasn't the type of Doctor Who that he wanted to tell. Whereas this feels like this is your first proper Sylvester McCoy era story, because this is Cartmel's version of Doctor Who going forward.
I wonder if had this taken place in 25 or 26, some of the theatricality would have been toned down a bit and it would have been a bit more naturalistic.
Yeah, because I think that's the thing. Like, I mean, I think the Kangs are wonderful, but the you know they like we were saying, they've got their own sort of language and what have you throughout this, but they are talking in you know that kind of BBC
Yes.
receiver, you know, how everyone was speaking on TV at that time. It was quite posh, and
I
you
feel
think, oh,
like you could take them out of this production and put them into, say, the BBC's Taming of the Shrew, and we wouldn't have too much trouble.
no. They needed to give them sort of, so I suppose, some sort of regional accent, really.
What's going on with those wigs as well? They all look
Oh,
like punk rockers.
yeah.
It's
I love
certainly a
it.
look.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, because again, I think, you know, they've gone to that point of like making the sets all grubby and grimy and what have you. But you would think that these girls would be the same, that they'd be, you know, their faces would be, you know, rather than pristine makeup and everything, they would be smeared with, you know, dirt and what have you. A few
Yeah,
bits and
we're
tears.
sort of halfway there, aren't we? But
Yeah.
I do appreciate the effort.
Oh, yeah,
And I
definitely.
bet this felt super fresh when it first came out. To those people that had watched all of the Eric Sword years, this must have felt really good. No continuity as well in this.
I wonder, you know, it'd be because, like I say, I didn't really get to see much of 1980s Doctor Who up until this point. I've just got little snippets in my memory. But I wonder what it was like going from Colin Baker to this, because it feels like quite a directional change, a real, you know, fork in the road kind of thing.
Thinking like in terms of the tone of the show and the portrayal of the Doctor as well. Yeah. And I think I know some people that loved the Colin Baker era when it went out and so really pushed against this. I think Pete Lambert really pushed against this when it came out. But then I know other people like Cy Hart who had totally sort of pulled away from the show because Colin was violent and unpredictable and nasty and just adored Sylvester McCoy when he came in because he was a lot warmer, even though he does some questionable things. He's presented in a lot gentler fashion.
Because he's more like that sort of kindly uncle kind of persona, isn't it?
Can I sing to you for a second?
Yeah, go for it.
I mean, it's a bit like disco music.
And this was the second go at it as well, wasn't it? Because the first one got
Yeah.
rejected.
Have you
So,
heard it?
no, I haven't.
It's on the Blu-ray,
All right, okay.
and I had an interesting conversation with a musician when I did Delta and the Bannermen, who really says that the original score, it was right to ditch it. It's he said it was like all atmosphere but no pace, so it's like a score from the 60s, some of that sort of music, concrete style music. So J&T must have been like, what the hell is this? Like there's no momentum to this music at all. But then on the other end of the scale, lovely Kef comes along and goes, right, well, jazz it up a bit.
Yeah, because I think that bit that we've just watched, where the cleaner is going into the basement and it's got the Kang's foot out the back, the music doesn't suit that scene very well, is it? Because it sounds almost quite heroic and bombastic, but you need something darker and you know, sinister, don't you there?
But what's funny is we keep having those scenes of the cleaners with their latest victim, heading towards the basement, and that gets more comical as it goes, doesn't it? Fluffy slippers and all sorts
Yeah,
in
I
there.
love
It's
that
crazy. Oh my God, you know what? We haven't even talked about the Doctor and Mel.
No, we haven't.
And they've been about for quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that's most noticeable is that we still haven't got the red question mark umbrella at the moment, have
Yeah, that
we?
is very odd, that one, isn't it?
Yeah, this sort of weird bamboo cane, I suppose, but
It's like you said, it's in flux, it's in transition.
But I noticed he's not wearing his braces outside his pullover like he was in Time in the Rani, which was a weird choice.
Which he says, thank goodness, Mel, in this incarnation, I have regained a sense of haute couture. Oh no, look at this caretaker. He's hilarious when he dies. He's all sort of boggly-eyed. Do you like the cleaners? Do you like the design of the cleaners?
I do. I don't understand the attachments that they got. I don't know how good they would be at cleaning with a drill and a buzz saw. And you know, my wife said to me, when I said I was recording this one with yourself, and Paradise Towers is a firm favorite in our house.
Oh,
My
wonderful.
son loves it. It's his favorite from the classic era.
Young man of great taste.
Oh yeah. But my wife was going, you know, the Daleks would make better cleaners than the cleaners because at least they got a sink plunger and they could unblock the toilets, you know. And it's kind of, yeah, that does make sense. Whereas, you know.
I sort of figured, like, if Terrence Dix was script editing at this point, he'd cover it with a line, i.e., those are not the usual attachments that they have, but because they're doing horrible murders, somebody has, in fact,
Putting them
refitted
back.
them. Yeah.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, there isn't that line. So you're like, well, what does that claw do?
Yeah. Other than grab people around the neck, as we see with this the cleaner that's just the caretaker that's just got killed.
They're never quite, no matter what size they are, they never quite fit inside the bin, do they?
No.
<There's> some...
And it does beg the question with that opening, how did they get a body into it anyhow? Because it's just a little slit with the legs out.
I think that's one of those questions that you said that we shouldn't ask.
Yes. Yeah.
So the Seventh Doctor and Mel, how do you find them? And Mel in general.
Yeah, no, I like Mel. I mean, I don't understand the creative decision to have her scream at a drop of a hat. That feels like a real backward step for Doctor Who companions. You know, it feels like something that Susan would have done in the 60s. But as a character, I rather like her. You know, as you know, I don't get me wrong, I really like Perry. But you keep asking that question that your relationship with the doctor isn't the greatest. You're always arguing. What are you doing there? Whereas with Mel, you never get that impression that she doesn't want to be with the doctor. You get that impression that she's enjoying the adventures. She loves that life.
Quite the reverse, in fact. Look,
Yeah.
Doctor, look! There it is at the top, the swimming pool. She's got some enthusiasm, hasn't she?
Yeah. Oh, man alive. Yeah, I mean that's the thing. Unfortunately, I guess Bonnie Langford at this point was stage rather than TV, and therefore she gives a very theatrical stage performance, I suppose.
But she's playing it as written. Like I think she
Yeah.
only ever plays what's written. She,
Yeah.
now in the new series, she's written as a much more muted, naturalistic character. So she plays it that way. Here, she's given lines like, Pegs, is it true? Sent by powers you're not allowed to name, like how do you play that? You can't underplay those lines.
Yeah, no, that is very true. That is very true. But I mean, like, you know, Bonnie Langford now, she's been in gritty things like
Yeah.
EastEnders and all
It's
that sort of
true.
stuff.
You
So
learn, don't you?
you feel, you know, and It was like it's like David Tennant coming back and doing the 14th Doctor. You can see his improvement as an. I mean, he was a good actor back when he was 10, but when he was 14, you
I'd
can see
love to
that he.
see more, Dan.
Oh yeah, big
He
time. Three
really had
episodes.
it, didn't he?
Yeah, three episodes wasn't enough.
No, but it was not lovely to see all the
Yeah.
same.
Well, it got my wife interested in Doctor Who again because she had fallen away with Capaldi. Jodie didn't do anything for her. And then when it was like, oh, David Tennant's coming back, she was there. She was there watching it with me.
You sure it
And
wasn't Bonnie Langford coming back there, did it?
oh, possibly,
Yeah.
possibly.
I was so excited to see Mel in that in the giggle.
Yeah, oh, big time. And then Shooty, oh, she loves him. She thinks he's the sexiest thing ever. So,
Well, I mean, she's probably been checking out his Instagram account.
oh, yeah,
I mean,
he shredded that guy.
but you're right. I do think it is a long past time we have somebody that wants to be having adventures. I always say I prefer Bonnie with Colin. I think there's a real magic, and they're only in six episodes on TV, but they've done a wealth of big finishes, and they just have excellent chemistry, Colin and Bonnie. And she sort of he has no chance to be arrogant around her because she's always telling him off,
Shutting
which is
down, yeah.
how Colin works brilliantly. I do think McCoy and Bonnie work well together. But it's sort of a more of an even playing field. She can't really push McCoy around like she does with Colin because he's nice, you know? So it's two sort of nice people, which is a little less interesting.
I think that's the thing, when you think of the McCoy era, you think of him and Ace rather than him and Mel, don't you? And I think there's reasons for that because, like you say, there's the contrast in characters where he's a very measured and like almost anti-violence in a way, isn't it? Because a lot of the times that he gets out of situations, he talks his way out of them rather than fight. Whereas his Ace, he just wants to blow everything up, and it is a good contrast. You know?
McCoy literally said, didn't he? He didn't want his doctor to do any violent acts at all. It's why that moment in Battlefield where he nearly decapitates Mordred was supposed to really hit, because it was him sort of succumbing to violence for the first time.
Unfortunately, poor old Sylvester doesn't do anger very well, does
Oh,
he?
terrible.
It's not
It's
playing to his
awful.
strengths.
Do you know, I'm gonna be bold and say I think he gives some of his best performances in 24. And it's because it's like Troughton in The Underwater Menace, right? He's coming up against people that are so over the top. He has to bring it down. He's never gonna top them. So with Rich Brydges in this, he's underplaying all those scenes while Brydges is going wildly over the top. As a result, he's really compelling to watch.
Yeah, because I think it's those quieter moments that he does them so well, and which is I think as his time goes on, I guess they don't ha they have less and less of those sort of angry moments because I think they know what works for him, but I think this season does play to his strengths rather well, because
I'll say it
the.
goes the other way, though. I think in 26 he has too many moments where he has to
Oh,
share. Well, you know, why don't you forget the survey light and go? Or, I told you to stay still in survival, or even worse, Battlefield. There will be no, you know, it's like, oh, please
I
stop.
think that's the one that sticks in the mind is Battlefield, isn't it?
It's
Whereas
really
I think like Ghostlight and
terrible.
Curse of Fenric and Survival, they kind of get you forget those moments because they're. Like a blip in what is generally a very good production.
Please do not make me do that speech from Curse of Fenric. I will do it. All right. I won't do it. I won't. Oh my God, Tilda and Tabby are here. When did they turn up?
Oh yeah. I think these are a brilliant creation, Tabby and Tilda.
When I first watched this, these were my favorite scenes in the whole thing. Now I kind of love the whole thing, but I just love these grotesque old women.
Yeah, but I mean, we often laud Moffat for like turning the ordinary into something scary. And I
You
think
might
this.
Lord Moffat for doing
Oh, okay.
that. Go on, sorry, go on.
But Stephen Wyatt and Cartmell doing it here because these could be old ladies that lived in your street. you know, they've been lifted out of, you know, a suburban street and plonked in this weird world of
Do you not think
high-rise
there's
talent.
something a bit sinister about them even before we find out they're
Yeah,
cannibals?
I mean, I think that's the thing that they're very right from their first scene, there's a question mark. These are too good to be true. These are too nice, too jolly. There's got to be a dark secret.
I'm not even lying when I say this, because I know everyone makes the Rezzy's Lezzy's joke,
Okay.
right? But I swear to God, when I was a kid, I thought they were trying to seduce Mel. Like, they were just a little bit too interested in her. I was like, what is going on? And then when they tried to murder her and eat her, I was like, oh, okay, right. You got to remember, I'm from Crawley, right? It's quite a feral upbringing.
What do you think of Pex? Does he
Oh, the Arnold Schwarzenegger of Doctor Who. I mean, look at him. What a muscle man. Possibly miscast. I don't know.
Yeah, wasn't what I think wasn't when the script was wrote, they envisioned someone that was more muscular, more buff, and so that thing of them being an abject coward was kind of funnier because they were, you know, they were. I mean, why would that guy be a coward? Because he's, you know, he's built like Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, kind of
Yeah,
thing.
he looks like a coward because he's. I mean, don't get
Yeah.
me wrong. If I had that figure, I'd be very happy.
Oh
Okay,
yeah. Oh yeah. Me too. Me too.
but the joke it is that again. I think that's the director and the writer on different pages. Like, because he said as well, all the caretakers are supposed to be fat old men, like really, like Dad's Army, you know.
Yes, which makes sense because if all of the fit, you know, of age and you know, physical fitness were sent off to war, why weren't these caretakers sent? Because half of them should have been drafted into the army, surely. You
I
know, other
suppose the
than.
inference is if they're out of shape and ancient, that they'd be no useless in a war.
Yeah.
But because you've got Clive Merrison in there, he's only in his 40s, and I mean, I wouldn't lose Clive Merrison for
Oh no,
anything.
please. He's one of my favorite things in this story.
But it's sort of the director missing the point, you know? Oh, this bit here, right, with this weird ceremony they're doing around the totem pole. That's one of the things I really hate about science fiction, but done really well here. It's sort of weird alien traditions and superstitions. It's stuff I look at in Star Trek and go, oh, what are they doing? You know, sort of going around bumping chests and things like that. But actually, that's just a bit spooky.
Yeah, and again, it's that world building. You can kind of understand that these girls, like we've said, have had no upbringing. They've dragged themselves up, that they would have these weird ceremonies, especially now that, you know, their numbers getting depleted because you know, like the yellow ones have been totally wiped out, and now, you know, they're losing red and blue ones as well. You know, there would be some sort of ceremony to mark their passing.
I mean, I was in a, you know, it was a small gang of kids when I was growing up. We used to hang out outside together. We had like a secret handshake and stuff like that. So it's stuff like that, isn't it? But taken on to like a bigger scale, because they're in this extreme environment, you know, where people are dying.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, we
Oh,
finished.
it ended.
Yeah.
That went
It
by so quick.
did. It did.
I mean, we'll save Richard Briers and Clive Merrison for episode two.
Yeah.
But what did you think of that as a scene setup?
No, I think it's really good because it's brought all of the characters into play, isn't it? We've seen the Kangs. We've seen the caretakers, then the Rezzies, and then poor old Pex is brought into the fray as well. So we're introduced to all of those various stratas of this society. So I think it does its job very competently, I think.
If the first episode of a Doctor Who story is to make you want to continue, has Paradise Towers succeeded?
Yes, as a child, yeah, for sure. It did. I was keen to. I think it was that mystery of like, well, what are those white cleaner robots? What are they doing? Where are they taking all of those people? Yeah, there were a lot of like mysteries, and I think they intrigued me as a child.
I think I found it like when I first watched it, I found it quite funny because all the performances, the crazy old women and Richard Brize's stupid voice and stuff like this, it did make me laugh a lot. But because it was all in the dark and like clearly people were dying and things like that, I was a bit on edge as well. So it was a weird mixture of sort of comedy and horror.
Because it's almost, it's kind of mushing those two eras together, isn't it? You've got the Colin Baker larger than life bright colors kind of thing, and then it's clashing with the darkness and that kind of dystopia that Cartmell was kind of wanting to bring into it. Because like every time they go into the future, it's horrific. I don't know if I would want to live in there, his version of the future.
I
That's
certainly
the
wouldn't want to live in this town, like
thing.
high rise with horrible monsters in the pool and bloody elevators that can murder you at any minute. Oh, it's such a great idea, though. The idea of being trapped in a building with all these horrors inside.
And I should imagine, I mean, obviously it's hard for me to put myself in that situation because I grew up in rural West Country Devon. But like there were people watching this that lived in those high rises in Peckham and Croydon and so forth. And they could probably have related to that, the graffiti everywhere and lifts that don't work properly. And so I think it's quite good from that point of view. It's sort of
You've just enticed me with something, you know.
oh yeah.
Wow, they could, because they were doing all location stories and then they were doing all studio stories. Obviously, this is an all studio story, and it kind of has to be because it's custom based for all the weird stuff that's going on in this building. But if they had shot this in a high rise on film,
Oh.
ooh, that is enticing.
It would have looked
Well,
it, wouldn't
it would have been great. It would have
it?
been great. Well, I'm going to throw out, because I did put something out to Twitter to see if anybody would like to ask any questions, given this was your first commentary. And I have had some in. So I'm going to just ask you one for episode one. And it's from your friend of mine, Fraser Gregory. So be warned. Snog, marry, turn into a ghastly, constipated zombie. The chief caretaker, Tom Good. And rhubarb from Rhubarb and Custard. I don't know what that means.
Have I got to pick one to marry? One to...
Yeah, snog, marry, turn into a ghastly constipated zombie.
Well,
Sorry about this. I'm not
I
sure. He's not casting aspersions on your sexuality, I'm sure. It's just a game.
no. Well, I was not a massive fan of The Good Life, and I found because I remember watching it with my mum and dad. It must have probably been repeats because I think it was the 70s when that came out. But I remember thinking he was an insufferable prat, Tom Good.
I mean, he is. He's horrible.
Yeah, so I would turn him into a zombie. What did I have to do with the other one?
Snog or marry?
Okay. Where's that? What a choice.
I mean, you may as well snog the chief caretaker. His position of power, it might give you a bit of swing in Paradise Towers.
Yeah, you got to love a man in uniform as well, haven't you?
What the hell does rhubarb from Rhubarb and Custard look like?
Oh, it was like a cartoon, wasn't it? But it was a really scruffy cartoon.
Oh,
So,
well, I'm so sorry, but you've just married
yeah, no, I'm fine with that. I
it.
liked Rhubarb and Custard when I was a kid. So, yeah,
It's
why
the
not?
typical highbrow question we've come to expect from Fraser
That
Gregory.
was it's a brilliant question though, isn't it?
I
What
mean,
should I
he
think?
is a genius. Don't tell him,
Oh
but he is.
yeah. I gather that from hearing him on the HamFam kind of podcasts. Yeah. That's the case.
But don't tell him,
Okay.
even though this is going out.
Just...
Well, that was a delightful episode one. Would you care to hold my hand as we head into episode two and see what ghastly creations we'll face?
For sure, definitely.
Let's do it.